G'day everybody, welcome to my live talk at 1 o'clock. I thought we'd do a different time just to sort of, you know, get in touch with a few different people instead of the morning or the night. I hope everyone's well and probably a busy December like December's always are. I've been at home for a while now. I came back from a clinic run down through Victoria, then up to Taree, and I'm home now. The last actually live talk, I was at Taree, so I'm home for 6 weeks, and we're going to go camping this weekend with the kids, so that'll be fun. And been getting a few horses of ours in at the moment and going over them, and yeah, there's an interesting horse that I've been going over, and a horse that I started over 12 years ago, and he hasn't been ridden really for 6 years. He's been just bushed, and been interesting going over him and kind of going over the way I used to ride, because when I started him, I was riding a bit differently, and I rode in a certain way, probably used more legs and used reins in a different way and things like that. And riding him now after all this time off and just feeling him, it's quite interesting. I'm going, I'd probably work on that now and fix that area there and this area. But there's also some other things that we're going to address on him. But yeah, but what I'm feeling in him is what I sometimes feel in the clinic horses of the people I'm encouraged to sort of try to ride a little differently. And it just shows over the 12 years, or no more than that, I guess, from when I started him and I was riding. But it was, you know, I got bitten by a snake 12 years ago. So I'm working out that he might have been broken in for 2 years or 3 years before that. But it's quite interesting how you can sort of feel it, especially because he's been out for so long and feeling the difference and how we're going, I know I could fix that now. I know I could work on that now. And quite exciting. But anyway, because most of my life, as everyone knows that probably meets me or knows me a bit, I've spent all my time on helping others with their horses and other horses and things like that. So, to be back home doing a bit is great. But anyway, I've got some really good questions that have come through, and I'll start off. Rachel, you're the first question. Have been riding my horse in the halter for a few years. Just wondering if there would be any advantage to introducing a bit. I have plenty of control. She's light and responsive. Would a bit help her be even better? Well, it's kind of like a big question, I think, for everybody. Is the bit going to be any better? Is my horse going to be softer, more responsive, and you're obviously happy with what you've got. So if you're happy with what you've got, well, you don't need to change if you didn't want to. By the sounds of it, if your horse is happy with it, well, that's fine. Advantages of a bit. If you wanted to stay bitless, I would probably, depending on what sort of riding you do, I would say maybe go to a side pull. Now there will be sort of a week or so transferring over, because the side pull will twist in a different way a little bit as you pull the reins. So because the reins come from the side, so how am I going to show you this? So basically, yeah, say my phone here, if I pull on this rein here, it goes like that. If I pull on this rein here, it goes like that. So it actually kind of twist when you pull a side pull, it twists in the direction that you're kind of wanting the horse to twist its head, so the shape of it twists like that. Whereas in a halter, this will be a halter, okay, it comes from the bottom, so when you pull that way, it goes like that. So it actually, you're pulling the horse to actually want to tilt that way, but the halter's pulling that way a little bit. So the horse gets used to it, and I ride in a halter a lot, and I can still get a horse to flick its ear, tilt its head, tilt its thoughts, and bend and look to the left and look to the right by pulling the left rein or the right rein. So what the advantage of a side pull is, when you pick up a left rein, it automatically touches the left side of the body and touches the right side of the body. So what you can get is a bit more refinement in your rein positions and a bit more probably accuracy, and it's a little easier to use because everything's not coming just from the back. So sometimes it's easier for the horse to recognize, which means it's easier for to use, which means you've got two very definite pressure points, one on that side, one on that side, or connection points. The pressure points are obviously, when you're pulling, there's certain things that are happening. But so basically, I think you can probably do a bit more or feel a bit more, and the horse can feel a bit more and make it a little easier in a side pull. And that's where like a snaffle bit can be advantageous, is because the mouth's very sensitive, and once the horse is already kind of soft and going fairly balanced, it's just a new pathway to the brain. So because the mouth is very sensitive, and if you've got a soft, interested kind of horse, and you've already done most of the good balancing, so sometimes when the horses are out of balance and things like that, sometimes it's a bit better and kinder on them to be able to firm up a little bit on a rein, on a side pull or a holder, than sort of hanging there in its mouth. So when you go to, say, a bit, you'll notice that because there's also more angles of more areas of contact, more points of contact inside the horse's mouth, and it's a more sensitive area, sometimes you find that you'll have a little bit more refinement again, of feeling all the intricate little spots and being able to refine them a little more. So yes, there can be an advantage of going to the bit to have more of those more sensitive pressure points, that you can sort of touch the horse so you've got a better a better way of trying to think of the right word. It's just a better communicate. Like it's not a better, because some people argue, the bit's more force. Well, no, I'm trying to explain it in a way that the bit's not going to create more pain or force. It's just creating more angles of contact. So you can touch a rein in a certain way, and the horse goes, yeah, I can feel that. I can feel a bit roll in that certain way and twist there. Okay, yeah, that's different. I got to do this. So it's much more defined, I suppose. So when you get to that bit more refinement, sometimes you can find that refinement a little easier, especially when you're using the reins in different positions and things like that. The horse can really feel it, which means you'll get a sooner response from it. But the theory of going to a bit because your horse is heavy is definitely not something that I would be looking at, because in over the years I've had horses that, are actually frightened because there's something in their mouth and they're a bit too sensitive to it. So, but anyway, it's worth exploring. It's worth, I'm going to try a side pull for a while and see the difference of the horse, see if, there's a bit more lateral kind of, there's more effect when I pick up a lateral rein, like one rein, is the horse more aware of it and they bend a little easier. And because sometimes in holders and bosals, it's easy to get a horse a little braced, because of that kind of everything coming from the bottom, and a lot of people, if they ride in a bosal a bit too hard or a bit or in the wrong way, can put more brace in their horse than fix it. And bosals are really good for getting their horse to kind of bend and come into their backups. But when you start bending the horses like this, it's a bit intricate, and you've got to be a little careful that you don't put a brace in them. So, but anyway, it's good for sort of to chew over. But if you've got a soft horse, if you don't want any more, keep it in the holder. But if you would like to explore a little bit and try some things without, damaging your horse, it's good to know and try. I encourage people to sort of look into things like that. But if you're happy with and your horse is happy, as long as if you go to a bit, your horse is still happy too, and you use it in a way that keeps your horse still happy and the same sort of soft, happy horse that it was in the halter. But yeah. Anyway, Rachel, thank you for that question. Now, Helen. G'day, Helen. Hi, Mark. My young mare, Tootsie. Tootsie's a cool little Appaloosa horse, but she's an interesting little horse. I this is not the question, but I'll just explain her a little bit because I'm familiar with Tootsie. She's a little Appaloosa horse that lacks a lot of confidence. She gets quite wary, nervous around people and tight, and I know Helen's done a really good job of getting her, from when I met her on the first clinic to the second clinic, really getting her to soften and be comfortable and around people. And but she's a little mare that can kind of hold it in a little bit. And because she's only little, she's quite a cute little mare. But, yeah, she holds it in a little bit, which can make her, possibly a little explosive if you kept too much of that anxiety in her. But I'm really happy that she's coming along well, though, Helen, because it's nice to see those little horses that lack confidence build confidence and start to, you know, become active thinking, you know, horses, because I think it makes their whole life better. I think once you can show them that they can actively think and make decisions, and by the sounds of it, with the rest of the question, when you said down here that she's low in the pecking order, you know, it's nice that she can come in with a person and have a point of view and express herself a little bit and be comfortable, because it gives her that place of, oh, well, you know, I'm not, you know, always pushed down the pecking order, because though horses may be in a herd, sometimes that's not the right herd, and they're still a little troubled in that herd, and actually more comfortable when the person comes in, because they go, oh, I've got someone that's going to kind of, I can kind of stand with and hang around, and I feel safe around, and because these other horses, you know, don't really like them. And I'm just looking out, you know, out our window at the moment, and in the paddock there, but in that paddock there's a interesting herd out there, and there's two mares, and I like them because they're horses, but it's sometimes hard when you watch they're like the two, you know, sisters in Cinderella that are kind of like, you know, they're just not very nice to the other two mares, and you sometimes go, oh, gee, they're not very nice to them, and it's just the way they are, and there's a mare that's had a foal, and she's very wary of letting those mares anywhere near. She's very protective, because once upon a time, one of those mares actually tried to steal her first ever foal, and did steal it, so we had to kind of rectify that, but we learned something new out of those horses when that happened. But now she's very wary of them. But when she's tough enough now to sort of say, nah, I've been a mother now, and you're not getting near my foal. But you can see her saying, we're going to stick away from these guys. But she's happy because there's other horses in the herd that make her happy. But anyway, I'm getting a bit off track. But what I'm sort of getting at is, yeah, there are horses that, though we think they've got a good life because they're out in the herd, maybe that herd life's not for them, and there would be another horse out there that would be right for them, but that's just not in that particular herd. But anyway, so yeah, being with people can be a good thing, and that's why I think we always have to rectify the relationship and the things that are happening in the interactions with our horses and the work that we're doing with our horses. It's got to be a good feeling thing, because it's one part of that horse's life that helps them with the rest of their life, I think. So anyway, she's coming along really well. My question has to do with, when I go out to catch her when she's on her own or away from the other three larger horses, she's no problem at all. And this kind of tells me that it's not like she's drawn to the other saying, oh, here comes a person, that's ordinary, I'm going to go with my mates. So she'd rather come to you than the other horses. It's only when the three are near her and get inquisitive or want to be with me and then come up to her or me as I'm trying to hold her, she gets worried about them being close. She's at the bottom of the pecking order and, as you know, not super confident, and moves away from them and me. I'm worried that it's setting up a wrong pattern for her. Other than shooing the others away, which I'm not keen on doing, or giving out hay to distract them, do you have any other thoughts? So just the two things that you've suggested there, which one you're not keen on, the shooing away. So the shooing away is obviously, if you did that too much, you'll go out in the paddock and you don't want the other horses not to be interested in you, because then they'll go, oh, you come out and shoo us away, well, we're not going to come over. And you don't want to start to set that up. But there is also a part of that that you want to say, well, hang on a minute. There is a bubble, okay? You still can have a bubble, okay? You can interact with those other horses, but then still show them a bubble. And that's where I'm going to sort of go with that, I think. So don't go to Tootsie first. Go to the other horses first. Get that off their chest. Spend a bit of time just, you know, doing a bit with them, what they like, you know, whether it's a scratch or getting them to sort of say, hey, oh, they've come over to you. I've come out here. Look, I haven't got hay. So they might come over thinking, oh, I wonder if we get some hay or something. We'll just go and check them out. And then say, so you there with Tootsie, and then they come over. She goes away because she's scared of them. Interact with them first. Go to them and say, hello, I haven't got hay. I'm going to give you a scratch. Righto, whatever. We've done our interactions. See if they kind of go, righto, I'm done now. Okay. And then maybe having a way of breaking the conversation with them would be good. Whether you just kind of stand a little bit and just say, well, I'm not interested in the interaction now. Just kind of turn off a little bit to them. And when they sort of go off back grazing again, then you just wander over and do something with Tootsie. And hopefully they've done their thing. They've ticked it off their bucket list. And then maybe when you go over there, you can have that time with her instead of you being fresh in the paddock and them going, oh, there she is. And you know, you having to shoo them away. Okay, next scenario is they, when you've done that, they may just go, oh, she's over with Tootsie now, let's go and see what's going on over there. And they've already been with you, they've already kind of done that, but that's your time with Tootsie. So if you were scratching with Tootsie and you were doing something, it's in your, it's acceptable for you to say, this is my scratching, my time, not yours. And that's sometimes what a horse would do for if another horse interferes in something that the other horses don't want it to interfere in. They would say, don't come in. Now, shooing away is different to saying, don't come in. Okay? So, basically, you've got to say to that horse as it's approaching, no. Somehow you say, whether you step up and say no, and then go back to Tootsie, but you're not going, I'm going to chase on you away down the paddock. So you're not shooing them. You're just making a clear boundary like a horse would do when it says, this is I'm doing this with this horse and you're not welcome, not here. But you've already made them feel welcome. You've already gone out there. You've interacted with them. You've done all that. Now it's you're going over there and that's her time. And if they want more, well, not while you're with Tootsie, and they start to learn that. It's not like you're going to have to shoo them away without giving them any time, because you've given them time. And because they've ticked it off their bucket list, you're hoping that they're, right, they're done now, and they're back to doing what they were doing, you know, whether it be under a tree or eating grass or whatever. So just try that a little bit. And as I say, the other thing is like, you know, it's not bad just to feed them a little bit, but then, you know, that's also, you know, some in desperate measures, you go, I'll chuck a bit of hay to you while I do something with the other horse, just so you can do that with the other horse. But I think just, you know, because I've had horses that are hard to catch, for instance, and they have a buddy, and instead of going for the horse that's hard to catch in the paddock, so when I went to Germany, there was this, like, uncatchable pony. He wasn't as uncatchable as some of the ones I've seen, but you know, in that sort of environment and to that adjustment setter, he was tough. And I just went, and I realised that his buddy's not uncatchable. His buddy was a bit easier to deal with. So I just went and spent some time with his buddy and, you know, walked around the others and until he started getting a little interested in me, and then was a little interested, we interacted together, and, you know, instead of going for him, I just did the rest of that. So, yeah, I think, you know, that I think just trying things like that might help. But you're in every right to say, see, because when I talk about driving pressure, people get worried about I can't push on horses. And I know they think, oh, Mark teaches us not to drive and, you know, I can't push a horse. Well, no. A boundary's a boundary. I just don't want people to turn in this, I'm going to motivate my horse by pushing energy into it all the time just to get it to do stuff. Okay. That's what gets horses feeling like they're getting pushed down the pecking order. But committing to boundaries and saying, no, I will step up and if you push into my boundary, I will push and say no. That's okay, because that's clarity and that's what horses are okay with. They're challenging your boundary and you say, my boundary's clear. It's okay to do that. You're not a bully by doing that. You're just telling them that I'm strong, but I'm still kind, but I'm not going to take my boundary to you and start pestering you. It's when we take our boundaries to our horses and move them about with our driving pressure that we start to get them pretty unhappy. So it's okay to say no, and that's not shooing them away. That's just saying, don't come in. Even if they do bounce off your boundary a bit, that's okay. One of them has FOMO. I'm not sure what that is. That's I'm not sure on all these things, but anyway. Good, Helen. I hope it works for you anyway. Where am I up to? Oh, no. Karen. Hi, Mark. My Mary's pretty responsive to the reins in that she does flex bend when asked. I have realised recently that often she really drops her head low when doing so and then tends to get heavy and bracy. It's like she's trying to escape, avoid, rather than actually relax into the bend nicely. I should add that I ride her either in a rope holder or side pull, and she responds the same in both. I'm coming to the Gundagai Clinic in January, but do you have any suggestions I can work on in the meantime? Okay. Now, the good thing about coming to the clinic, I'll be able to offer you some ideas here, but then I'll be able to clarify things when you see me. As you may start be getting aware, if you've watched some of the videos or you've seen some of my stuff, I'm not big on doing a lot of bending without connecting that bend to something. Some people have been to a few different clinics of mine may notice that there's are some horses that have got a real jaw block that they're just kind of locked up, that I'll just get them to loosen up and start to tip their thoughts and just loosen and look, and I'll let them stand still just to look like that, you know, but I don't start feeding down a rein and pulling their, you know, drawing their head round till they're bent all the way round and bent all the way round without turning that into something important. So it's hard with the little video camera to kind of show you this, but it's a whole, like, when I'm feeling on the reins, it's a thought change that you're looking for. So you're looking the horse that, you know, if you pull the left rein, your horse is thinking left. If you pull the right rein, your horse is thinking right. So with the thoughts going that direction, well, obviously the feet will go that direction. So then everything is in sort of like a sequence. It's like, okay, thoughts, bend, look, shoulders, and the horse just kind of everything links up to that initial pressure that you've put there in the bend. Now, the other way I want you to look at it is, because I used to always look at it as just the thoughts, and the thoughts will make the feet move, and that's what's going to happen. But there's another way I look at it as well, which has also helped me understand, I guess it's helped me understand brace in horses. And it's got me understanding more about brace and how horses hang on to brace. So, and this is where it's a thought process, but it comes through rebalancing. So if I got twisted that far, okay, and stayed there, I'm kind of out of balance. And there's only so long someone's going to stay there. You know, you're not going to sit there like that all day like that, because you're going to get a bit of sore neck or like this. Okay, if I was standing up right now, I'd go like that, but everything would go like, if I wanted to walk left right now, I'd kind of get up and I'd look left and I would start to lead out and everything would go like that. So basically that bend, you see that starting to do that there, you know, everything's, I don't go bend and then go left with straight shoulders, okay? And when you walk around, something that's really good to do is you follow your hand like that, you walk around following your hand. And just keep walking around following. You notice that as you do that, as you're looking, everything is all in alignment, staying in balance all the way down to your feet. And you can imagine that if someone tied a rope to your hand. Now, the interesting thing is, if your horse is like a board, this is not correct. It's all got to be loose and moving. So there's still a bend in the neck and the horse is flicking the ear, looking and thinking. So everything stays in alignment. So something, you can imagine someone tied a rope to your hand and you were just, everything was in alignment following that, but it was just, you were just following the floaty feel of the rope. So you notice when I move, everything's moving together right down to my feet. So I'm constantly in balance, okay? It's not very often in natural movement and thinking towards our directions and things like that as a human, we put ourselves out of balance. It's only when we're kind of looking behind us, running away from someone, or, you know, doing certain jobs where we're twisting and moving and doing that, but in general, moving about and stuff like that, where we tend to be constantly in alignment and in balance, and that's what I'm really starting to sort of, you know, understand and think about in the reins. And as I say, it's really getting me to understand brace, because brace is basically when a horse gets out of alignment, suddenly the other parts of the body just freeze and shut down and don't move. And then when they do move, it's kind of like slightly explosive. So I'm going a long way from soft and lateral flexion, aren't I? But I'm trying to get a bit of information about flexion out there so you can understand it. So what I would encourage is not bending the horse without moving the rest of the body, because what that does is everything else stays either braced. Some horses bend and their shoulders are still kind of stuck to the ground, like they're glued to the ground, and the horse is going, yeah, I'm soft. Yeah, look at me, I'm bendy, look. And then you actually ask for some energy when the horse's head's bent there, and you feel this, and it pushes out just like that. So that means the horse's thoughts weren't there for one, because as soon as you ask for energy, the horse went, I want my head back to straighten out. Because most horses, naturally, to get back in balance, they just want to straighten out and go towards where they want to be, okay? And that's what a lot of horses are struggling to do all the time on the corner. They're just wanting to straighten out. So as soon as they're straightened out, they go, oh, thank God for that. Okay, they never find balance in the reins. They actually find balance when the reins are let off. And that's what we always struggle with. So some lessons that I would get you to do is, because your horse is putting its head down, chances are the withers down, the front feet are stuck to the ground, and then it's going to start bending and twisting, and then it's going to start leaning on you. And I think that's what's happening. It's starting to lean. So basically, I would sort of put a bit of bend in your horse, but as the horse goes down, I would just lift the rein up like that, and it will go, oh, that's not working. And then it'll loosen and lift its head up just a tad, and you go, and then you just loosen the rein and say, thanks. And then you go for a bend again, and the horse will go, oh, sorry, Casey. Yeah, I've just been going on about that. But it's when you're in motion. Either way, this will help it. So, I wasn't sure about, yeah. So when you're asking your horse to flex and bend when it's in motion, good-o. Now, that's fine. We'll still work on that. So either way, you can do this from a standstill and it will help, because it's in motion that it's happening, but sometimes you can fix it from a standstill. So what we're going to try and do is get the horse from a standstill to go into motion through the rein and actually balance as it searches into the rein. So when it starts walking, it's found balance through the rein, instead of, say, riding a straight line and then putting a corner on and the horse getting all heavy and out of balance. So either way, I think we're going to fix it from a standstill. So for anyone that's listening that's done lateral flexion and their horse is kind of with still feet and they're bending too much, this will help. But anyone who's got a horse that's traveling forward and getting kind of twisted and out of balance, this will also help. So you're going to start from standing still, because the horse learns from standing still. It can step up and search into the reins and balance. And so it's almost like you're starting here and you're riding out up here, instead of riding here and then taking the rein and going crash, okay? So you're starting at the standstill. So I just pick up the rein, pick up a little bend, and if the horse starts to do any twisting in that, in the bend or pushing down when its feet are still, you just lift the rein till it goes, okay, that's not working, I'll try something different. Until you can lift the rein and the horse picks up a little like that. If it just leans forward and pushes, you just pick up that rein and maybe have it against its jaw a little, and it'll go, and then it might just rock back off that one rein and go, that's not working. And then you'll pick up that rein again, and when you feel it push or lean and tilt, you just lift. Until what will start to usually happen is when you pick up that rein, and because you're going to want that rein eventually to lead that horse out. So the idea is when you pick up the left rein, I'm going to stay with the left rein, the horse flicks to the left with its ear, loosens in the body and prepares itself to follow that rein and follow out with its shoulders, its wither lifting and its shoulders loosening and following its thought. Instead of just bending and just walking through out over there, going down onto its shoulders. So we're teaching the horse to lift and lift out and follow out with that rein, lift out and follow out with that rein. So it's not like you're going to keep it against the neck the whole time, because that would maybe start to feel like a either indirect rein that pushes the shoulders out, or if you came further back with it, it'd start to make the horse want to move its hind quarter over. So you would actually pick it up halfway up its neck and just not push it across or anything, but just have it close to the neck and say, I'm picking up that rein, and you want the horse to go, I feel that rein on that side, yep. And then you might say, would you like to follow it? And if the horse twists and pushes, well, you just go up till it goes, oh, that's not working, and it lifts and comes back out of that hole, and then you wait, and then you try again until you can kind of pick up the rein, bend, look, and, oh, I'm following. There's a video, actually, it's the demonstration I did at Wagga Wagga at the university. We're going to put that up this month, actually, over the weekend. I think the videos are due to go up. I've decided to put the demonstration up. There's because there's just some good, you know, talking and footage about, you know, ideas and stuff like that. And there's a and basically there's a hot horse that's probably done a bit of bending and riding up with the legs a little bit, but it's just a horse I've got a holder on, and I'm just going to teach it to lead out. Obviously, because I'm doing a demo, I'm talking, but you can see the progress of the horse where I'm trying to say, hey, wait. And there's another lesson too, which is coming out, which is it's a similar thing on a bigger, heavier kind of young horse that tends to get his head down and low and kind of go a bit chugging along. And it's just a lifting, opening the shoulder lesson, where we're lifting the rein when he buries down, and then he tries to find his way out. And if you pick up on those videos after they come on, that'd be really specific for what you're doing there, Karen. So, and that's just exactly what I've explained. Is I'm going to pick up the rein, lift the wither, loosen up, thoughts go over there, and you do it from a standstill, because then the horse is going into motion, lifting up into motion, not going from motion and then suddenly crashing and then have to be lift back up again. So you're just starting off like you're taking off up and out into that turn, instead of having the I'm coming in, I'm crashing, and then I'm coming back up again. Okay, so that's why I teach horses to do it from a standstill, because you're already righto, we're here, now let's ride up and out to the left, up and out to the right. If ever you can understand that, that's kind of what I'm thinking. We're not going underground, we're going up above, under the on top car park. Thanks for the question, Karen. And yeah, hopefully, I think those videos will help that are coming up. Is there an optimum length of time for training session? This is an interesting question, because there's no particular answer. And I'll explain that in a bit. And does that time change for an unhandled, troubled horse? How do you know when you've hit the horse's limit? Okay. If you've hit the horse's limit, the training session is going pear-shaped. It's going bad. Okay. No, that's a bit negative. I'm going to take that back. Sorry, am I allowed to take that back? I'm going to take that back. So if the horse looks like it's hitting its limit, sometimes you can be training in the wrong way. So there's different things I used to look for in horses years ago, and now I look for more, you know, other things. But horses can concentrate on something for a long time. They can eat a bucket of food for a long time. They can concentrate on things for a long time. You know, they can do that. But young horses, you want to keep their interest and desire. So, yes, with a young horse, I would keep the sessions a little shorter and keep them bright-eyed. So what you're looking for is, I've got a young horse, it's interested, it's bright-eyed. Now, I'll talk about wild horses too. Wild horses have a bigger... You can train them for longer. And I know people might disagree with that, but you can train them for longer. I'm not saying train. I'm just saying, no, I shouldn't have said train. You're not training them for longer. You're with them. You can be with them for longer because they're in the green zone. They're in the aware.
They're in the I am focused, I'm thinking zone, okay? So if that's just standing inside a yard and getting them to look across and then walking away and look across and then walking away and then standing there, you can be in there for half an hour and not really have your horse too bothered, okay, in the sense of it's just aware and whatever. But if you see that horse starting to go, well, I've looked at you a few times and I'm not interested anymore and I'm just kind of starting to zone out because I'm just starting to go, well, you know, there's not much happening over there. You know your horse is starting to zone out a little and maybe, so then you either go, well, before I get to that stage, I'm going to let my horse out and then the next day I'm going to get it in. Or you can interrupt that zoning out and say, come back. Okay, and that's the thing about training. You can keep a horse's attention for a little while. Now, for the young, interested, fairly quiet horses, I would start to do, and I'm not going to put a length of time on it. I'm not going to say, I can't say there's a specific time. I'm just going to say shorter or longer, because there might be a 5-minute session is great, a 10-minute session might be great, a half an hour session might be okay, an hour might be too much. But on an interested horse, that's a young, kind of bright-eyed foal that's kind of interested and you just want to teach it to lead a bit, okay? It sniffs on you, it gets a little interested. You know, you might be at that stage, you're putting a holder on it, so you gently put a holder on it, get it to lead left, right a couple of times and then let it go. And the horse goes, oh, that was easy. Oh. But if you kept excited and said, I'm going to get you to lead, do this and lead, do this, and then they stopped trying and losing their desire, then next time you're going to have a foal that's like, oh, I'm not interested, that was kind of a bit of a grind. So in those kind of bright-eyed, in the green zone, interested horses, you can probably do shorter training sessions and then slowly build on it as their confidence and understanding builds, because when they find the last thing easy, they go, well, that's easy, and they try something new, easy. But if you just kind of put more things on top of each other, you'll kind of blow them. So you could do a short little lesson, and they let up a bit this way, let up a bit this way. Good, let them out. Then the next day you might add a little bit more to that. But what I encourage people to do is recognise if your horse is starting to get too quiet or zone out, and then you've got to start picking them up all the time. If you've got a horse that you've got to pick up all the time, well, you know that it's kind of zoning out and it's not got that desire and interest. So they're a little harder. So a horse that's kind of comes in already dull, well, and not interested, that's where people go to driving pressure and things like that, because the horse is dull and they got to get it moving. So they go, oh, I'm going to chase you around a bit or get a flag and get you moving. Those ones are a little bit more unique. And I'd say the thing I encourage, and I know Kelly's watching, I saw her there before. She's got a horse that's kind of played polo and been a racehorse. Then play polo, I mean, and she can zone out and she can gaze and glaze and things like that, and that horse specific length of training lessons is I think quite important, because with that horse you'll get some nice responses to the reins, and then all of a sudden she'll go oh, that's right, ka-ching, she'll zone out, gaze, whatever she does, and get heavy. So what I encouraged Kelly to do was do a little bit very well. So it might be, I'm picking up the reins, life, thank you, loosen the reins. And you might do that 3 or 4 times and just walk away, do something different, go away and come back. But if you picked up the reins 4 times and she had life and you loosened them and said, thanks for the life, then next time you might pick them up 5 times. But if you said, I've got life 4 times and keep going for 10 times, she might go, oh, okay, and zone out. So some horses that have already been a bit shut down or started to zone out, those horses I would do a shorter session, but expect just a little more out of them. So I'd expect a sort of a higher level of awareness. And so say, for instance, one of the lessons might be, I'm walking up to you. Oh, you acknowledge me. Thank you, and walk away. That's your lesson. And then come back half an hour later or the next day or even 10 minutes later. You don't have to go to the next day to do the next training session. You can actually go away, give the horse some soak time, go and do its own thing, and then come back with a new lesson 10 or 15 minutes later, and that horse will go, oh, hello, there's you again. Oh, that's all I have to do. Thank you. And then you can repeat that until all of a sudden you get a stronger, longer interest, and that horse starts to open up and communicate and hold a longer awareness and attention to things. So, yeah, you've just opened up a can of worms, haven't you? And now I'm going to think about all these different horses and different training sessions. And but what I've found, as I go back to the really wild horses, I mean, they're like, whoo, they're like pinging. And they're like, so, yeah, I'd do the same thing. I'd get a little bit of interest and then I'd walk away and reward the horse, give it space to soak and relax. But then I'd come back in again. But those really wild horses, they would, as I say, I could be in with a wild horse trying to get a little touch on it for an hour, because I didn't have the, you know, when I had the some of those really, really tough horses, I didn't have just weeks at my disposal. I didn't have that because, you know, when I started taking on horses and in a country town, you know, people weren't going to send you a mob of pretty rank tough horses and go, yeah, Mark, just take as long as you like. You know, money's not an option. I just wanted you to do the best for these horses that you can. I had to do the best I could, keeping the horse's welfare in mind with the time I had. So there'd be times there I'd be in with a wild horse, you know, for an hour and a half, and I would get a touch on it and I would walk away, and that lesson went for an hour and it was a full hour. But if I was careful, because that horse was wild, I had its attention the whole time, because it chances are it sort of thought I was a tiger, and so it could hold their attention as long as I finished with that kind of response at the end, that horse went, oh, that wasn't so bad, and then I walk away. And but what I did in that sort of hour is I might have got some interest, and it would have been approach and retreat the whole way. So for the horse, it was a cycle of little ups and downs. It wasn't like, here's a lesson, take it away, here's another lesson. It was, oh, here's, I'm getting near the red, or I just looked across and he walked away and I came back into the green and felt a little better and I give it a bit of time and then I come back in again. So I kind of made it feel like it was a lot of little lessons on top of each other, all in that one lesson. So yeah, those super, super sensitive wild horses, you can be in for a fair bit of time as long as you're recognising the rises and falls in their tension and how they're feeling, and you don't work them in a way that makes them shut down or zone out. That's where it becomes a problem. Some people work their horses, my phone just, you know, do too much and control their horses' every movement, as in take the right to think away, and they're the ones that sort of, you know, the horse will start to, you know, those sort of lessons, if the horse zones out straight away and you carry them around, no length of time's a good length because the horse is not really happy. But if you've got an interactive thinking horse, the lessons can last a fair while and they're going to stay on board. But yeah, going back to the ones that have already kind of started going to that learned helplessness or shutting down and stuff like that, those ones you would have to do short and go away and then build it, because as soon as it starts to, you know, because it's so many things that you're going to use on a shutdown horse is going to be similar to what's already happened. So if you touch the reins and that was, if that was a trigger for that horse to shut down, then, I've just touched the reins and lost my horse. I just had it going so good when I was catching it, but then I touched the reins and it shut down because that was a trigger. It was like a shutting down trigger. So, you know, you can have get a great connection and catch that shutdown horse and it's all interactive, and then you can sit on it and touch the reins and it just goes whoop. So that's, in those particular horses, very small lesson, but expect a lot, as in, oh, there, look, wow, you listen to the reins, thanks, get off, take the saddle off and walk away. So yeah, sorry for the vagueness in that last answer, because it's everyone who knows me knows that if you want the 1, 2, 3 out of me, it's very difficult and everything's so specific. But I just want to encourage everyone, just if you see the horse dulling or losing interest, then you know you're going too far, and you might have to back off a little.
or you see your horse, yeah, just losing that try. So for everyone, you can't go wrong with a short lesson to start with and then build the length of the lessons, even if that was shut down horses, wild horses, interested young horses that aren't wild, anything like that. If you start a little smaller to start with, but if you've started something, there's sometimes if you made a mistake or, you know, I've always tried to teach people to train horses in a way that if you got a phone call from the school and you had to walk out of that yard right now in a hurry, you haven't left anything undone. Now, sometimes in the training horses, there's an undoing process, as in I'm getting a horse to let go. So on a young horse, you're not having an undoing process. It's just a building block process of building up things on top of each other till the horse is, you know, more educated. So if you do it in the right way, the lesson can be any time. You could walk in, and as long as you walked in the right way with an awareness, and then you could walk in, the horse would reward a little thing and then go, oh crikey, one of my kids are sick at school, I've got to jump in the car and rush off. Well, you could leave that horse at any time, no worries at all. It's bad lessons that leave the horse halfway through something lost and frightened, and then you've got to go, geez, I've got to pick the kids up, and then the next day you come into that horse and it goes, nah, sorry, you've left me hanging, and that's no good. So if you work your horse in a way that everything is a question and an answer, and you're slowly, you know, watching every part of it, then, you know, if you had to run out of a lesson, you haven't left the horse on an edge. But what I find doing clinics is I get horses that have big braces in them, and I'll get into something, like I'll get into a can of worms, and I'll get into that brace, and I'll say, I can get you through this brace, just hang on with me, just hang with me. But that's the times when I know I've got into something that I have to shift the brace, not go, oh, I've just put this pressure on you, and I've only just started to make you kind of uncomfortable about this, and I've got to go now, see ya. So sometimes at clinics, some people see me go, can I just put your two lessons together? Because I know, because I'm undoing old stuff, that I'm actually not comfortable leaving that lesson until I've shown the horse the other side of the brace and got them through the brace. So if people can understand that, then remember, training a horse that hasn't got a lot of brace or old stuff put on it, you can kind of just build slowly, nice and steadily, and have short lessons that turn into longer lessons later. But sometimes unlocking a brace at a clinic, I might hang in on a lesson until I've got the horse on the other side, and that's a lesson I wouldn't be very comfortable in leaving. So I'd make sure that the stars are aligned in a way that I don't have to walk out of that lesson. If I did, I have the skills to go back and fix it, but I'm just saying I like to hang in till something's rectified. But yeah, anyway, thanks everybody. We're right. Cool. Thanks everybody for the questions, and yeah, I'll talk to you next year. We'll have a Christmas message coming for everybody, so I won't do all my Merry Christmases now, but thanks everybody, and I will be doing another question and answer in the new year. So thanks a lot. Bye.